Turn in your Bibles this morning to Ruth chapter 2 as we pick up our series from last Sunday morning. You'll find that on page 268. And while you're finding that, just let me say two things. Firstly, there is a very good presentation by the Salt Mine Theatre Company coming to Belfast in September. It's entitled The Secret Believers Tour. Well worth going to. Eddie Lyle writes these words. We've had Eddie here preaching not all that long ago. He says, living in today's world with its multimedia highway and information on tap, we have no excuse to be ignorant any longer about the persecution that many believers face on a daily basis. We hope that secret believers will lift the lid on persecution as never before, and our vision of a world where every persecuted Christian is remembered and supported by other Christians will become a reality. That event takes place on Monday, the 27th of September at Willowfield Parish Church. And we're organising a group if people are interested in going. There's a list in the foyer, and that trip's been organised by Maribeth Little. So just place your name on that list, and we'll ensure that we can get tickets for that event. Also, Michael very trustingly has said to me this morning that he says, I'm happy for people to take books, to give me their name, and to sort out the money later. So there's an offer you can't refuse for those commentaries that I recommended last Sunday morning. Ruth chapter 2 this morning. Some of you who might have been away last Sunday morning, or dare I say asleep, I know people never go to sleep, do they, when we're teaching Sunday mornings in Hamilton Road, but if you were away and you missed last Sunday morning, let me give you a very quick synopsis of the story that we looked at so far. We looked at a family, a man named Elimelech in chapter 1, following a famine that hits Bethlehem, which ironically is called the house of bread. A famine hits the area, and this man Elimelech decides, rightly or wrongly, to head off with his family, his wife, Naomi, and their two children, and they head off to Moab. And when they arrive in Moab, it seems that for Naomi, life just falls apart. And the question that we were looking at last Sunday morning is, you know, looking for God when life falls apart. Where is God when it seems that the circumstances of our world, which for many in places like Pakistan and Afghanistan today, is a reality. Here is Naomi. She arrives in Moab. There's this famine. There are immigrants, verse 2 of chapter 1. And almost as soon as they arrive, her husband dies. And then we discovered, as if that wasn't bad enough as part of the story, that when her two sons marry two women from Moab, that they find that in their marriages they're unable to have children. And it seems as if Naomi's family line or Elimelech's family line is going to be stamped out in this foreign country that they have found themselves in. And then, as if things cannot get any worse, Naomi's two sons die. And so we reach the end of chapter 1 with a hopeless situation where life completely falls apart for Naomi. And we were just thinking about that question last Sunday morning. Where is God in those kinds of circumstances? What is this? As if the bottom just falls out of our world. And so as we got to the end of chapter 1, we find two widows heading back to Bethlehem. Naomi and Ruth, one of her daughter-in-laws, who makes this amazing promise to stick with Naomi no matter what. Here's the promise that we were looking at last Sunday morning. It's an incredible promise from Ruth, pagan woman, who's converted, it looks, to faith in God on her way back to Bethlehem, makes this incredible promise to Naomi. She replied to Naomi. Ruth replies to Naomi, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people. And look at this next bit. Your God will be my God. And I believe that is Ruth's moment of conversion. As she says, the God of Israel is going to be my God. And it is going to affect the way that I live from this point onwards. Where you die, I will die. There I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates me from you. In many ways, she's a new believer. She really is stepping out in faith. She has no idea how things are going to work out. They're heading back on this dusty road. They are destitute and they are starving. And they have nobody to look out for them. And they arrive in Bethlehem. There's a little ray of hope that begins to shine at the end of chapter 1, as we saw last week. And you can miss it if you're not careful. The very last phrase of chapter 1, the barley harvest was beginning. And for somebody who's starving, and somebody who's heading back and has nobody to look after them, there's the ray of hope that just begins to shine into their lives. And we're left at the end of chapter 1 with just a little shaft of light that begins to shine into the darkness of the story of chapter 1. And I think we're right in saying, as we said last Sunday morning, that Ruth, or Naomi rather, is the counterpart, the female counterpart to Job in the Old Testament. Our world just literally falls apart. But as we'll see this morning, she's not lost her faith in God. So let's pick up the story in chapter 2. Let's take some minutes to read it through. Remember, there were no chapter divisions. I hope you took up the challenge last week to read this book through this past week. Because if you can get the flow of the story, the things that we find in chapter 1 run all the way through this book, as we'll see this morning. So chapter 2. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go into the fields and pick up the leftover grain left behind, behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. And as it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars that the men have filled." At this she bowed down with her face to the ground, and she exclaimed, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and your mother and your homeland and came to live with a people that you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have given me comfort. You have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread, dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvester, he offered her some roast grain. She ate all that she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. Don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley that she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered, and Ruth brought out and gave to her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. The mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and to the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all the grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the servants, girls of Boaz, to glean until the barley and the wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Now, the first thing I want to say about chapter 2 is that we mustn't lose sight of what has happened so far. The events of chapter 1 we must carry with us into chapter 2. We need to remember that as chapter 2 begins, and as we're introduced again to Naomi and to Ruth, we need to remember their circumstances if we want to get to grips with this story. These are two women who've been widowed. These are two women who are arriving home destitute. These are two women who are arriving home starving. These are two women for whom the bottom has fallen out of their world. They have no one to provide for them. That's the setting to Ruth chapter 2. And sadly, some of you here this morning know what it's like to live with the emptiness after someone that you love dies. That is how it is for these two women. They have lost their husbands. But in the culture in which they live, not only have they lost their husbands, they have lost everything. They have no one to provide for them. Their world is empty. And that's perhaps why Naomi says what she says at the end of chapter 1. She says, "I went away full," in verse 1 of chapter 1. "I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty." And she says to people who saw her, she says, "I don't want you to call me Naomi anymore. to the circumstances of my life have been so tough. I want you to call me Mara. I want you to call me Mara because that means bitter. That's how I feel about life. I feel I've been dealt a horrendous blow. My life is empty. For her, it feels as if God has withdrawn his love from her. Philip Yancey gets it right when he talks about the pain of hopelessness. Some of you know what that feels like. You've been there. You've had that experience of someone that you love close to you dying. And Philip Yancey writes these words. He says, this is what happens when we suffer that kind of pain and that kind of emptiness. He says, pain narrows our vision. He says, it's one of those most private of sensations. Nobody can feel your pain for you. And he says, when you feel like that, it says it forces us to think about ourselves and about little else. That's what extreme pain does to us. And I want to suggest to you this morning, that's how Naomi feels at the beginning of chapter 2. I went away full. I had everything when I left here. I had my husband. I had my children. I'd come back empty. I have nothing. I have no one on whom I can depend. But this second chapter is all about new beginnings. It's a story which, as John Piper says in his commentary, shows us, and I love this phrase, God plots for the glory of his people. I wonder, do you believe that this morning? That no matter how dark your circumstances may be, no matter how hopeless your situation might seem, that God is working out his good purposes in our lives. Whether or not you can see how that works out or not, that is the faith which Ruth and Naomi have in this story. Chapter 2, you can see from the very first verse, introduces us to an intriguing note of hope. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. Here's another shaft of light that starts to shine into this story. The first shaft of light was harvest time for people who are starving. The second shaft of light that begins to shine is actually there is a relative, there is a living relative that can perhaps take care of Ruth and Naomi. But before we come to look at Boaz, let's take a closer look at the story that we're being told. In many ways, I love chapter 2. It sort of divides itself into three scenes. And as I look at this during the course of the week, it seems that each scene draws our attention to a different character in the story. So let's follow it through together and see what this story has to teach us this morning. I want to suggest, firstly, that the scene which begins to develop in verses 1 to 3 draws our attention back to Ruth this morning. She is also hurting. Don't lose sight of that in this story. She's been widowed. She has taken a gigantic step of faith by saying to Naomi, my people are going to be your people and your God is going to be my God. Can you imagine what that was like for Ruth? Leaving everything that she knew behind, she makes this incredible promise back in verse 1. That I am going to go with you. I'm going to leave my own people behind. I'm going to leave my own culture behind. I'm going to come with you. And whatever is ahead, I trust in the God of Israel. My God will be your God. Someone has written rightly that if we leave that vow, that promise that Ruth makes back in chapter 1, we will not make sense of the rest of the story. We need to carry that promise that she makes, saying, my God, your God will be my God. We need to carry that with us through the story. So we pick up the story in chapter 2, and the conversation that takes place between Ruth and Naomi in verses 2 and 3. Look at it with me. And the women begin to talk together. Ruth, the Moabite, says to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. Just think how far this woman has come. She's left her family behind. She's left the people that could have supported her back in Moab. And here she is saying, look, I'm going to go out into the fields and I'm going to glean, which I'll explain in just a moment, but I'm going to find some food for us. And Naomi says to her in verse 3, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. And as it turned out, it's a lovely phrase that, isn't it? And we'll pick that up in a few minutes. As it turned out, it just so happened that she found herself working in the field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Now let me tell you something about what Ruth is proposing to do here, because this is a really important part of the story. It's called gleaning. It's kind of like an Old Testament welfare system given by God to provide for the poor. You couldn't go and sign on for the dole in those days. If you were poor and if you were destitute, God had set up this really important law for landowners, and it went something like this. A landowner would employ local men and women as reapers. They would move through the field, and they would harvest the grain. But the edges of the fields all the way around were to be left for the poor and for the destitute. That is where they could find food. And they could follow behind at a distance and pick up anything that was left on the ground behind those who were harvesting. It was a tough job. There's nothing romantic about it. There have been a few paintings painted, a bit like this one by the French painter, which shows that sort of gleaning is a sort of a nice sort of harvest farming scene, that it's sort of a fairly relaxed thing to do, and you sort of wander around. But it was tough, tough work. It wasn't like these pictures portray it. It was much more like these kind of pictures that we're familiar with seeing. Children harvesting and getting what they can out of the rubbish dumps. Or these children on the screen behind me sort of picking up the leftovers that have fallen out onto the ground. That's what I was like in Naomi and Ruth's day. But in this opening scene, Ruth fulfills her promise to Naomi by taking the initiative to find food. You notice that in verse 2, it's Ruth who takes the initiative. Naomi doesn't push her out and says, this is what you need to do. Ruth says, no, I'm going to keep my promise to you. I said that I will stick with you through thick and thin. Your God's going to be my God, and I trust this God. I am going to step out in faith, and I'm going to trust your God to provide for us. And Ruth becomes a wonderful illustration in this story of faith in action, radical faith in action. I'm going to apply that to our lives a little bit later on. Let's move to scene 2 in this story, which takes us to the character of Boaz. It moves us from verse 4 all the way through to verse 16, which is very much the sort of center of this passage this morning. Boaz is introduced to us in two ways. Firstly, in verse 1, he's introduced to us as a man of standing, or a man of valor, perhaps in some versions of the Bible you have this morning. It's as if the narrator wants to say to us, right at the very beginning of chapter 2, let me give you a little glimpse of what this man is like. Before we get into the story, let me just show you a little of the character of the man that Ruth is going to meet in this story. And to be a man of valor, a man of standing, the meaning that stands behind these words is suggesting to us that Boaz is somebody who is strong, someone who is wealthy, somebody who has an honorable reputation, somebody who is competent, and a man of action. He was a great man to meet. He was a man on whom you could depend. He may well have been a military man. He may be involved in some of Israel's military campaigns. But he's introduced to us here in chapter 1 as a wealthy landowner, the master of the fields where much of the story of Ruth takes place. But I also want you to notice in verses 4 and 5 that he is also introduced to us in this story as a man of God. Or as John Piper says in his commentary, as a God-saturated man. Look how he greets his servants in verse 4. Comes to his servants as he moves into the workplace and says, "The Lord be with you." And there's this response from his workers. It says, "The Lord bless you." You think, well, that's a nice way to start the day. And you have that experience in your workplace. You go to work in, your boss says that to you. "Lord bless you." Maybe not. But that's how the day started with Boaz. But I want to suggest to you this morning that what might sound to us like a kind of hello at the beginning of the day between Boaz and his workers distinguishes this field from any other. Not only has Ruth found a field in which she can find food, she's found a field that belongs to a man of God, to a workplace where her newfound God is present. And the narrator says to us in this story, it just so happened that this is where where Ruth ends up. John Piper writes these challenging words in his commentary in relation to Boaz. He writes this, he says, if you want to know someone's relation to God, it helps to find out how far God has saturated them down to the details of everyday life. Evidently, Boaz was such a God-saturated man that his farming business and his relationship to his employees was shot through with God. He actually greets his workers with God. That's quite challenging, actually, isn't it? And Boaz immediately spots this Moabite woman in verse 6. We can pick up the story. He wants to know who this woman is. And I want to suggest this morning that he actually asks this question, not because he sort of begins to fancy Ruth at this part in the story. I know a lot of people do suggest that. That's where the romance begins. But I think she actually sticks out as a foreigner in the story. It would have been difficult not to have spotted her because she's a Moabite woman. She's from a different culture. She's from a different land. And he wants to know who she is. And he wants to know how she got here. How is this woman working in my field? You read the answer in verses 6 and 7. It seems that this is the woman that everybody's been talking about. Here's the foreman's answer in verse 6. This is the Moabite woman who came back from Moab. She's the one who came back with Naomi. And she asked me, says the foreman, if I could glean amongst the sheaves behind the harvesters. You say, well, what's so significant about that? Well, she's not supposed to be behind the harvesters. She's supposed to be at the edges of the field. And it seems that what Ruth is actually doing here is actually she's pushing the boundaries of her faith. She goes and she knows that she has to provide for Naomi. She's made this promise to Naomi. She has this newfound faith in God. And it's not enough for her to go with the other gleaners. She says, I'm going to actually push my faith out a bit here. I'm going to ask if I can actually get in behind the harvesters. That's not the place where the gleaners were allowed to go. But Ruth says, I believe that God's going to provide for us. I'm going to ask the question. And it seems that the foreman grants her request. So Ruth is actually behind the harvesters. She's not with the gleaners on the edges of the fields. And as this story begins to unfold, you begin to see how this man of God responds and how an astonishing outpouring of grace. Boaz exceeds Ruth's request at every level. It's a wonderful demonstration of God's grace to people like you and me. We are like Ruth in this story, as we'll see when we come to communion this morning. And I want you to carry this picture of grace as we come to communion this morning. You see how Boaz treats Ruth. Just look with me. Follow the sequence of events here. In verse 8, he grants her special rights in his field. In verse 9, he personally guarantees her safety with words that show us just how vulnerable it was for women working in that kind of situation where ungodly landowners would often take advantage of poor female workers. He provides water for her in verse 9. He prays for her in verse 12. But unknown to Boaz, he's going to become the answer to his own prayer. Be careful what you pray. Not what that says to us as the story unfolds. In verse 14, he draws her into his family circle. She's invited to come and eat with the rest of some of his relatives. And in verses 15 and 16, he says to his workers, please ensure that this woman gets everything that she needs. And Ruth is overwhelmed by such generosity. Look at verse 10. She says, I don't understand why you're being so generous to me. Why have I found such favor? Why have you noticed me? I'm a foreigner. I don't want to suggest that might be the very question we carry to communion this morning. God, why have you noticed me? Why have you been gracious to me? I don't deserve your grace. And in verse 11, we discover the answer to that question. Boaz is motivated because he has a heart for God. He's heard the story. He's heard about the risks that she's taken. If you look at verse 11, he says, I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. How you've left everybody behind. You've left your father. You left your mother. You left your homeland. You've come to live with the people that you didn't know before. He says, I've heard about your faith. I've heard what you've said, that your God will be my God, that you've embraced the God of Israel. And in his prayer in verse 12, I think that's what really answers Ruth's question in verse 10. I think he's saying it's because you took refuge under the wings of God. That's why I want to be gracious to you. Ruth wants to know why Boaz has treated her so generously. And Boaz's answer in verses 11 and 12, I think in many ways unlock the rest of this little story. It makes clear to us in verse 12 that God is really the one who is rewarding Ruth for her love in Naomi. And the picture that we're given is not of a God who rewards us for good deeds, but of a God as a great winged eagle in a sense. And Ruth is a threatened little eaglet coming to find safety under the eagle's wings, because the implication of this prayer in verse 12 is that God will reward Ruth because she has sought refuge under the wings of God. It takes us back to the vow that Ruth makes on her way back to Bethlehem. Your people are going to be my people. Your God is going to be my God. Ruth has set her heart on God for hope and for joy. And when we make that kind of commitment to God, we can be sure that he will plot for our glory. John Piper puts it like this. He says, we are hearing something very profound when we hear Boaz say, in effect, Ruth, because you have taken refuge under the wings of God, therefore I pray that he will vindicate the power and the grace of his wings and give you what you need. But isn't that how the Christian life is supposed to work? As we take refuge under the wings of God, and as we draw our strength from him, and with the strength like Ruth, we're able to serve and we're able to love other people. That way God is glorified. Ruth does not find favor from God because of what she does. She finds favor from God because of the relationship that she enters into with God and comes, if you like, under the wings of God as an undeserving Moabite pagan woman. And the actions of this godly man, Boaz, are a wonderful illustration of the grace that we do not deserve. This prayer of Boaz in verse 12 is a wonderful reminder that God will have mercy on anyone who is willing to humble themselves like Ruth and take refuge under the wings of God. It reminds me of the posters which are on the front of our church building at the moment that people see day in and day out as they pass this building, which have the words of Jesus Christ on them. And it says this on the poster, "Whoever comes to me, I will never drive away." That's what Ruth has learnt. Whoever comes to me, I will never drive away. And that brings us to scene three in this story, which takes us through the remaining verses from 17 through to verse 23. And back to the character of Naomi in this story. And in verses 17 and 18, if you've got your Bible in front of you, you will see that Ruth is able to gather up as much food as she needs it. She carries it back to the town in verse 18. And her mother-in-law is staggered in verse 19, and so she should be. Because Ruth arrives in almost like with armfuls of food here. She said in verse 19, Ruth says to her mother-in-law says, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man that took notice of you." This is an overwhelming amount of food that Ruth comes back with. Then Ruth tells her mother-in-law about the place that she'd been. She says, "The name of the man that I worked for today was Boaz. The Lord bless him," says Naomi. Here's Naomi beginning to see the grace of God breaking back into their lives. "Blessed be the man who took notice of you. The Lord bless him." It's as if God's grace is beginning to sort of break back into Naomi's life again. The sort of disaster of what we looked at last week in chapter 1. And now she's beginning to see that actually God is plotting for the glory of his people. God is working his good purposes out. God is beginning to provide for them. And as the chapter comes to a close, as we'll see next week, Naomi begins to hatch a plan, a marriage plan, as the romance begins to develop between Boaz and Naomi, or Ruth rather. I've just checked if I've got the right people. But more about that next week. So what does this passage have to teach us this morning? You sort of find yourself asking that question as you go through this story. What does this have to teach me and you this morning? How do you apply this story to our lives? Well, as I asked that question, looked at this passage, there are three things that came to my mind that I want to just apply this morning. Firstly, as you look at each character, I think we get a different challenge from each character in this story. Firstly, I think Ruth inspires us to put our faith into action. She's the one who takes the initiative at the beginning of this story. Ruth's story is good for us to contemplate when we crawl out of bed in the morning. And why do I say that? Well, I say that because it's very easy for us to fill our days with the things that we love to do. It's very easy to fill our days with lives that are focused on our own interests. And Ruth's practical faith in this second chapter is a real challenge because her first concern is not for herself, not for her own interests, but for Naomi. She's made that promise. God has begun to transform her life. And that means when God starts to transform our lives, that our interests change from being focused on ourselves and we begin to become more focused on other people. And even for Ruth, that it was going to be dirty work, rough surroundings, working with unsavory people. Ruth takes the initiative in verse 2 of this chapter with the expectation that her newfound God would meet her needs. That's faith in action. Even though Ruth is only a beginner, even though she's like a baby Christian, just starting out on the journey, she steps out in faith, confident that God is going to provide for her needs. And she actually, through her actions, challenges the way Boaz has been providing for the poor in the first place. Boaz has the signs out at the beginning of at the openings to his field saying, "Gleaners, welcome." But Ruth has been pushing the boundaries because she's somebody who exercises faith and action. She says, "I'm not content just to glean with these people here. I believe God's going to provide for my needs. I'm going to ask if I can work behind the harvesters so that I can get the food that I need for Naomi." That's a bold statement of faith. And God rewards her faith. Carolyn James puts it in her commentary, and I love this. She says, "The letter of the law says, let them glean." That's where Boaz was at. Yeah, let them glean. They're welcome to come to my field. But the spirit of the law says, feed them. And Ruth's bold proposals in this story expose the difference. That's what faith in action looks like. Because you see, there is always more to following God than we think. And here's Naomi in the story. She really challenges my understanding of faith in action. Sometimes we are so safe in our Christian lives that we never really take steps of faith unless we have it all worked out in front of us. And we call it faith. But look at Ruth in this story. She leaves everything behind in Moab. Her father, her mother, her relatives. She comes to faith in the God of Israel, and she moves forward with the God of Israel, not knowing how anything is going to work out. She doesn't even know if they're going to find food. She doesn't even know if they're going to find a house. She doesn't even know if they're going to be provided for. But she says, your God is going to be my God, and I'm going to place my faith in that God. Ruth's faith, for me, is a real challenge in this story. Somebody who's willing to take that initiative, to take that first step. She says, I'm going gleaning. I don't know how it's going to work out. But I know that God's going to provide for me somehow, somewhere. Second challenge I find in this story is from Boaz. And Boaz is somebody who encourages us to take our faith into the workplace. That is quite significant, really. Here's a man who literally brings God with him into the workplace. He greets his fellow workers with God. Now, we said a few minutes ago, not many of us are going to have that experience tomorrow morning when you go into work and your boss comes up to you and says, hey, what? Garvin, Lord be with you. And you reply, the Lord bless you. And maybe you do work in a Christian organization and you will have that experience, but it won't be many experiences of us. But I wonder what would happen if we took more of the Bible into the workplace with us. It says Boaz takes God with him into the workplace. And do you see the kind of values that are here in this story? God's care for the poor is upheld in Boaz's workplace. Women are respected and not exploited. Ruth is kept safe. Prophets are minimized at the expense of justice for the needy. And all that happens even before Boaz shows up. Because his workforce understand that godly values are practiced in this place. And when Boaz arrives, he prays. Verse 12. Let me ask you this morning, how many of you pray about your workplace before you go into your workplace in the morning? How many of us are conscious that actually we're bringing God with us, in a sense, into the workplace? You see, for Boaz, there's no such thing as what we sometimes describe as this sacred and secular divide in life, where we maybe have different values in our family and perhaps even different values in church life and different values in the workplace. For Boaz, it's all one. It's the same value system. I wonder how our appearance or perhaps our approach to work might change if we took more of God and his values into the workplace. To pray as we go into the workplace tomorrow morning, God, will you help me to show people that I work with more of you, more of your grace, as Boaz does to Ruth in this story. Why not make that a point of praying about your work before you go in tomorrow morning? And you might be amazed at what God might do through you. And thirdly, as I reflect on this story this morning, and it brings us back to the character of God, which is a great place to finish this morning. Naomi has not lost her faith in God. Are you glad about that? After the darkness of last week, it's not gone. It took a pretty bad hammering, all right. Call me Mara, don't call me Naomi. I feel empty, I was sent away full, but I've come back with nothing. But here's the glimpse of Naomi's faith still happening, it's still here. She points us to faith in the providence of God. This is a great place to finish this morning. Ruth and Naomi now have a new home. We're not really told the details of that. They have someone in Boaz who's providing for their needs. Naomi is thrilled at the end of this chapter. She begins to recognize God's grace, that God really is plotting for their glory. God really is working his good purposes out in their lives. Look at verse 20. Naomi says, the Lord bless this man. He's not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. And then she added, this man is our close relative. He's the one who's going to give us hope, as we'll see next week. I love almost the understatement of the narrator of this story who says, and we've touched on this already, that Ruth just happens to go into the field of Boaz. Do you find that kind of quite intriguing this morning? Just so happens that that's the field that she goes into. I suggest to you that this story points us to the providence of God. It runs all the way through chapter 2. It's not there explicitly, but let me suggest to you how it works. Ruth just happens to come to Bethlehem. Ruth just happens to be hungry. Ruth just happens to go out to the fields. Ruth just randomly picks a field, inverted commas. It just happens to belong to a rich man. It just happens that this particular man loves God. It just happens that he's single. It just happens that this is the man who will eventually marry Ruth. It just so happens that through the marriage of Ruth and Boaz, King David will be born. It just so happens that through the line of King David, that Jesus is born. That's what we call the providence of God. And it's everywhere if we just take time to look. A chance meeting that you'll have with someone this week. Phone call that comes from somebody that you're not expecting. Conversation takes place that you don't expect. The providence of God is everywhere if we have the eyes to see it. Or do you just put them down to coincidences? Or do you actually say, no, that is the hand of God at work in this world? Maybe like Naomi, we need to trust and we need to look and we need to recognize the providence of God. So three very practical lessons as we come to the end of chapter 2 this morning. Radical faith. That desire to step out, even though we do not know how things will work out, but your faith is in the character of God. Boaz taking his faith into the workplace, or wherever you may be in this coming week. It doesn't have to be the workplace. It's just where you spend your time. And Naomi pointing us to the providence of God. Let's take some moments just to pause, shall we? Just think, what's God saying to you in this story? I've shared with you some of the things that God's been saying to me in this story this morning. Just let's stop for a moment and ask the question quietly this morning. God, what are you showing me in this story this morning? How do you want me to respond to what we've been looking at this morning? Let's make our own personal response quietly before God this morning.